Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the WTF One That Time When podcast. Today, we are discussing that time when Alain Prost almost joined a backmarker team. And what a shocker that would have been. My name is Matthew Gallagher, and joining me in the lockdown audio booth, where we're not actually together, but we are connected via souls, it's of course Tom Bellingham, WTF One founder, and Dan Thorne, WTF One website guru. How are we both?
Well, hello there.
What a fine day it is to be recording words on a machine.
Lovely. I said before recording to say more than one word so that we heard what we say over Discord, and that is perfect from both of you. Thank you so much for that. Right, so today, as I say, Alain Prost almost made a, well, how much of it was his decision? We'll talk about that today. Because we're talking about that time Alain Prost was fired by Ferrari and almost ended up joining Ligier. Now, I kind of want to throw out there, so say like you had a Ferrari road car, what would be the equivalent that he would go to? So if you have a road car of like something really nice, what would the Ligier have been an equivalent of?
Oh, let's think. Car that used to be good, but then is a bit rubbish by the early 90s.
Ooh. I don't know enough about cars to do that.
Yeah, comparison. I'm not expecting an answer from you, Tommy.
Let's go with an Alpine A610.
Wow, okay, we're going proper full model and serial number. Love it. Right, so let's talk about Alain Prost quickly as a career summary. His debut with McLaren was in 1980, and he was a title contender with Renault. And then back to McLaren, lost a championship to Lauda by half a point. I mean, how do you sleep at night losing a championship by half a point? But then he won three titles in 5 years, had a rivalry with Senna, and became F1's most successful driver at the time. I've actually had a lovely little sit-down chat with Prost, which was intriguing, at Monaco. But anyway, any words on Prost's career as he went to Ferrari in 1990?
Yeah, I think by that time, you know, there was the rivalry with Senna was obvious, but I think he'd basically become maybe the most complete driver at the time. He'd basically started off his career as a really fast, talented driver, and then as years had gone on, had worked out how to apply that to basically winning everything. And it wasn't until Senna came along that I don't think he really had someone who could compete with him and challenge him in terms of talent, I think would be fair to say, maybe.
I don't really know enough about this era because it was before my time, but thinking back through the champions of the sport and stuff, I guess this was almost like the start of the, like you say, complete driver, where something Schumacher did a lot more in the future. But Formula One, and we've said it so many times in the podcast and even the last one about truly like you needing that luck. It's not just about being the quickest guy over a single lap. It's about playing the politics, playing, you know, what team you're going to go to, making sure you've got the right teammate. And I feel like Prost did that. And the fact that he could beat Senna, even though Senna was arguably a quicker driver, just by doing the stuff that not necessarily on the track and getting into people's heads and doing all that kind of stuff. That for me, that's how I see Alain Prost, as one of those drivers that showed that it's not about being the fastest guy on the track at all points to win a Formula One race. There's so much more to it than that.
Yeah, when he's Senna first came to McLaren alongside him in 88, I think he quite quickly realised that in terms of pure pace, he wasn't going to beat Senna. So he decided to focus his entire every weekend, just focus on being quick in the race, which is quite a sort of big thing to get over in terms of the ego of a racing driver, to accept that you're not as good as your own teammate in this area, but to then work out a way where you can be better is sort of quite an impressive thing to achieve, I think.
Especially when you're winning, like you say, winning titles, and you look at the stats that Senna had in qualifying, but then Prost won more titles. I mean, you'd argue that he was in a better car for longer and whatever, but it does show, like you say, that you can put ego to the side and win smart, not by being as fast as other people.
So I reckon a man from a more recent time that could definitely have taken notes is Fernando Alonso, then, of how to do the politics of Formula One as well as the racing and that whole combined thing. As you say, it's the psychological aspect. It's making sure that the team's good and that, you know, they work with you. And yeah, there's a lot more to Formula One than just driving fast around a track. And I think some people, maybe people that just watch it at face value, don't really understand. But yeah, let's take a look at the Ferrari years. So the team hadn't won a driver's title since 1989.
That should say 79, sorry.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I was like, that's 1 year. I'm like Ron Burgundy. I'm just reading things. Dan, I'm trusting you on these facts.
Don't trust me.
The team hadn't won a driver's title since 1979 and the constructors since 1983. So you could say that the Ferrari team were struggling. You know, they were not as... Well, they weren't as dominant as they were in the previous, that time when that we spoke about in 2004, where they were winning everything. It was a lot harder for them back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the turbo era, and they never really sort of got to grips with the turbo engines and everything that went with it, I don't think.
Intriguing. I'm glad I wasn't a Ferrari fan back when I wasn't born. So Prost came close in 1990, punted off by Senna at Suzuka. Would you say that was one of those moments that hits an F1 history compilation wheel?
Just yes, it has to, doesn't it? It's possibly the iconic F1 moment in all history, arguably.
Wow, huge statement from Dan Thorne. Would you agree, Tommy?
It's probably one of the... I know you have very strong opinions, which we probably shouldn't go into too much, but there is one of the worst signs of Senna's character, which no doubt he was an unbelievable driver, but again, kind of showing that there's more to the sport than just being quick, and Prost was kind of playing the political game. But in 1990, there was a weird point system again, wasn't there, where I don't actually know too much about the 1990 season, but was Ferrari really competitive that season, or were they, was it Prost kind of getting everything from the car to be able to match Senna and a McLaren?
Yeah, I think the McLaren was a bit better than the Ferrari, but I think it was quite close. But yeah, it was one of Prost's, probably his best seasons in the sport, I think. I think that was the year where he won from 14th on the grid in Mexico, because again, he just decided, oh, I can't qualify this car well, let's set the car up for the race, and was then untouchable. Yeah, it was a close season. The Ferrari sort of slightly behind the McLaren, but close, yeah.
It's strange that normally with these things, a driver... So Prost obviously knew that he was not going to get the treatment he wanted at McLaren and therefore had to move away from McLaren. And normally with these things, they go like a Lewis Hamilton, like went away from McLaren and it took a few years for the car to get good. It's almost strange that he jumped straight into that Ferrari and then they were in for a title hunt, rather than it being like him playing the long game of, I'm going to build Ferrari around me and get the car to where it needs to be. Because if anything, they were worse in 91 and 92 and for the next few years.
They were indeed, Tommy. Great little turn into the next point, which was 1991, where they didn't win anything and the car wasn't very good. And Prost criticised the team and was fired before the last race. Why exactly was he fired? Was it because of there were some bridges breaking at this point?
Yeah, it was, like I say, 91 was a bad season. They started the year quite poorly. I think they introduced a new car mid-season, which wasn't much better. And Prost started sort of throwing his opinion around and criticising the team. And I don't think it was a particularly happy environment at the end of that season. It's funny, you mentioned Alonso earlier as like how not to do things, but Prost kind of, I think he did a similar thing that year where he was just, you know, fed up and just, and he eventually called the car, he said the car was like a truck to drive. And, you know, you call a Ferrari a truck, the Italians and the Italian media aren't going to take kindly to that. And
no, they're not trying to sell trucks, are they?
No, exactly. Yeah.
Sports cars.
Yeah,
it's, it's crazy though that, and I wrote the, exactly the same thing about Alonso, that this era, them firing Prost because he said the car was a truck. You know, savage comments are made nowadays about the team and stuff. Like people like Fernando Alonso wouldn't have lasted two races if he couldn't have said a bad word about his team without getting fired. So it's pretty crazy to think that Ferrari were that proud that they'd even fire a world champion and arguably one of the best, if not the best, in Formula One.
I think that just shows how bad it was, though, wasn't it? Clearly the relationship wasn't working at this point, and very much diving into that Alonso arena of, well, we don't know behind the scenes what exactly happened, but
if he called,
I still
it
don't
an
think
F3000
anyone's
engine.
As bad as Alonso at breaking bridges in Formula One, but... We interrupt this That Time When podcast for a very brief chat about our sponsor for this episode, ExpressVPN. When you're browsing online, your internet service provider can see every single website you've ever visited, even in incognito mode. That's why, even when I'm at home, I never go online without using ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your ISP can't see the sites you visit. Most of the time, I don't even realise I have ExpressVPN on. It runs seamlessly in the background and is so easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button and you're protected. ExpressVPN is available on all your devices, phones, computers, even your smart TV. So there's no excuse for you not to be using it. Protect your online activity today by visiting our exclusive link, expressvpn.com/WTF1, and you can get an exclusive 3 months free on a 1 year package. That's expressvpn.com/WTF1. Now, back to the podcast. Let's take a look now at 1992 season. So all the top seats were taken, and Prost planned to take a sabbatical because obviously, you know, he's a world champion. He's not just going to go to any old team. But Renault wanted him to remain on the grid, and a test was set up with Ligier, which had just got the highly rated Renault engines. So would you say it's fair that Ligier were getting a little bit of hype at this point, or the fact that, you know, they could be further up the grid than maybe first thought?
Well, Ligier, they were a winning team in sort of the 70s and 80s, but then they'd slipped back into sort of nothingness and hadn't scored points for years by the early 90s, and they just weren't a great prospect for any drivers, to put it mildly. But yeah, getting Renault engines was a big deal, because when F1 ditched the turbos and went back to the sort of naturally aspirated era, Renault came in with a V10 and it was pretty good. And, you know, by the sort of middle of the 90s, everyone was onto V10s, and Renault were one of the first to go into that sort of setup for their engine. So I think it was probably a bit more optimism in 92 about them, but, you know, they you wouldn't go there expecting to really score podiums, let alone win.
Okay, intriguing. Yeah, so it's like they've got an engine boost. We could be a little bit further up the grid, but no promises. It's not going to be a championship. However, if there's no top seats available, is this a punt worth taking, I imagine, is what was going through Prost's mind.
Yeah. Well, it's worth, you know, unlimited testing back then. If you've got an opportunity to drive a car and see what it's like, you're not going to lose anything by spending a couple of days seeing what it's all about.
Exactly. Yeah. Mondo.
And all the drivers always complain, don't they, that they don't get enough time actually driving the cars. So I'm sure a lot of F1 drivers, especially now with COVID, I mean, even if you asked Lewis Hamilton if he wanted to drive the Williams, he'd probably say yes, because he's desperate to get in a Formula One car and do some laps.
Yeah, I mean,
and then he gets in and goes, actually, I'm all right.
I mean, also you got to consider, you know, Renault at this point, Renault were powering Williams, which was now the top team in F1, and Prost is probably at this point thinking, I want to drive for Williams. So if Renault is saying, oh, do you want to, you know, we'd like to see you on the grid, do you want to test this Ligier? He's not going to say no in case that jeopardizes his chance of a Williams seat down the line, which he ended up getting in 93. So, you know, he might not have had any intention of racing for Ligier, but again, the politics of it, testing the car, what's he got to lose?
Sneaky Prost, always thinking about it, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a clever guy.
Clever guy.
God, back in the day, being able to test an F1 car whenever you want. God, that was the life, wasn't it? Jeez. So looking at the test, it was at Estoril in the Ligier JS37 in January 1992 and initially used Eric, is it Comas? Is that
Comas,
how you say it?
Yes.
Boom, smashed it. Pronunciation on point. Used Eric Comas's helmet to try and avoid attention. I mean, that's one way to... What did he walk into the arena with the helmet already on? Was it very much like a this isn't happening? This is very much behind closed doors. We want as little people to find out as possible.
Yeah, that was basically it. The funny thing is as well that if Prost did want to sign for Ligier, he would have been replacing Comas. So it's kind of like, oh hey, can I borrow your helmet in case I take your job, sort of thing, which is kind of funny. But yeah, the thing is that Prost is quite a distinctive looking guy, and everyone quickly noticed that suddenly he was this really short guy with, you know, distinctive features through the visor, and realized that it wasn't Comas and that it was Prost.
Intriguing stuff. So I'm sure that hit the news headlines pretty quickly when everybody started to realize what was going on, and he then used his own helmet on day two. And he was 2 seconds faster than, I imagine, the team. Is it Boutsen?
Thierry Boutsen, yes.
Boutsen, yeah.
And he's not slow. He's not a not slow driver, so...
No, he was a race winner.
He was a race winner, yeah.
Jeez! So Prost just rocked up. Yeah, I can smash this. 2 seconds quicker. Your car isn't actually that slow. Everyone's just rubbish. And then that was it. So then he had to make the decision, which, of course, was the main thing around this that time when. And negotiations continued up until the first race. So what do you think those negotiations involved? Him going, yeah, I might do it, but just add a few more zeros? Or how do you think it was going and unfolding?
Well, I don't know. I can't imagine that he ever seriously would have considered it, to be honest, because, you know, a top driver going to a midfield car can be a worse career decision than taking a year out. Because, you know, if things go badly, then all of a sudden, you know, Williams might think, oh, actually, we don't want this guy. Let's get someone else younger instead. But, you know, sitting out for a year, he's still got the sort of the legend of being Alain Prost, and his reputation stays good, if you like.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess when you look at it, I don't know if it was different back in the day to sort of modern F1, but you feel like if you fall out of the F1 circus, unless you're like an Ocon who's a highly rated young prospect, people like Hülkenberg, for example, you know, that might be the last time we ever see him. So it's still a risk, isn't it? Either way, to say, oh, I'm going to take a year out. I'm sure the demand will be there later on. But was it the fact that Prost had that aura where he didn't really ever have to worry about getting back on the grid?
Yeah, I think so.
Didn't he play... I don't know what the situation at Williams was. Obviously, this was quite a controversial era for Williams where they were dominating, and they actually... Did they fire Mansell, or did he go?
No, Mansell was Prost's teammate at Ferrari.
Because he went to IndyCar,
and didn't get on with him. So when, I think during the season, '92, that Williams said, hey, we got Prost driving for us next year, Mansell said, oh no, screw this, and went to go to IndyCar instead of being Prost's teammate.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And again, this is where the whole Alain Prost thinking about everything... you know, the whole picture and how he can win the title. Didn't he veto Senna joining, because didn't they want Senna as well?
Yeah, he managed to get a one-year veto on Senna being his teammate in '93.
So he basically had 1 year in the best car by quite a considerable margin with Damon Hill in the car, who was the test driver and had barely even done any F1 races. So it was pretty basically a rookie for all sense and purposes. And yeah, that, and then like you say, he obviously quit the year after, but again, it's Prost playing that game to be like, this is my chance to return. I want to win the world championship. I'm going to do everything I can. And to win the world championship, I need the best car. I need Ayrton Senna, not my teammate. I need a driver that's not going to beat me, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Intriguing stuff. So as you say, he took a sabbatical, decided not to go with Ligier, and then used his Renault connections to join Williams for 1993. And taking a look at Ligier's season, which is quite interesting to look at, they had a vast improvement. So with the new Renault engine, They managed points with both of their drivers, and they managed eighth in the championship, which, when you look at the fact that they weren't scoring any points for a number of years, clearly it was a step in the right direction. And I guess it leaves you wondering, how would Prost have actually done in that Ligier if he was actually 1.5, 2 seconds quicker than his teammate?
Yeah, yeah. Apparently there's stories from the whole year that whenever sort of Comas or Boutsing would achieve a reasonable result, that the engineers would look at the times and work out where Prost would have finished if he'd been in the car.
oh, that's demoralising, isn't it?
And I read somewhere online, someone actually worked out, like, if it was between 1.5, 2 seconds quicker than Comas and Boutsen, if Prost had driven for the team, he'd have been, you know, regularly fighting for podiums with Benetton and Ferrari. And, you know, who knows, maybe even with Prost's skill and experience, maybe the odd win. But
that would have been a story and a half, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
This was an era where I think it's fair to say that the performance gaps between the drivers, now everyone goes through these, you know, the Formula ladder, if you like, and do so much kind of fitness and training. But this is an era where there was a lot bigger a difference between the drivers, and a good driver could make such a huge difference in the car. So,
well, yeah, back then you'd have a fag. Some people have a fag, wouldn't they, before the race?
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas, you know, this one, they have proper conditioning, and they're very much in the. I guess there's no differentials in terms of their physical performance. It's all down to actual skill, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas there was a lot more variables back then.
Yeah,
exactly. The pay drivers of the mid 90s were not Formula 3 champions like Lance Stroll is. They were very much, do you want to drive? And then were 7 seconds a lap slower and didn't qualify for races and stuff. So different era, and it would have been really interesting to see how Prost would have done in it. It would have been a really interesting story. But like you say, it's a risk. I guess it's a risk if he hadn't done well, or people kind of thought, well, even though they wouldn't, but he's not winning in Ligier, so can't be that good, even though they wouldn't have thought that. But he's one of those drivers that, because he took a year out, people are like, oh, well, Prost is going to come back. A bit like Alonso now. People are remembering Alonso as a world champion. Now he's not in the sport and not the kind of lowly places that he was getting for the McLaren, because he couldn't do anything in the McLaren because it was such a crap car.
Yeah, exactly. A calculated risk, for sure. Will we see Alonso back on the grid? That's another story altogether. But is that it? Is that all done? Are we good? Have we got out everything we need to?
It's strange. One thing that wasn't written in the sheet that I thought was quite strange is that Prost ended up buying Ligier.
Yes, he did. He did.
Why not?
So, yeah, if people have been listening to that time when, for a long time, I think one of the very first ones we did one on Prost, didn't we, where they were in the kind of the tail end of Prost, but we go into Prost GP and how that all kind of formed. So feel free to go listen to that one if you haven't yet. But yeah, lovely. Prost ended up buying Ligier in 497.
Lovely little plug. Wonderful. Well, that's it. We're done for that time when. Please do send us your stories, your topic ideas, whatever you'd like us to cover in this series using the hashtag WTF1podcast. Don't send us an email. It's just long. Just get involved. Unvolved? Involved on social media. Hashtag WTF1podcast. And we always read your suggestions, and we very much put it in the pot of ideas, don't we?
Absolutely. Indeed.
Make sure you give us 5 stars because we deserve nothing less on wherever you're listening. Leave us a review as well. And that is it. We are done. Thank you so much for listening. I almost said watching, but I didn't. Listening. And we'll see you for another That Time When podcast. Goodbye.
Bye.
Ta-ra.
Bye-bye.
Bye-see.
Bovril.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.